Okay, so I got a question for you. And that is, do you remember Oscar the Grouch from Sesame Street? He lived in a garbage can. I guess he still does. His favorite song is I Love Trash. And he is really mean to anybody that's nice to him. Okay, so I'll admit to you that I have never actually met the Muppet that is Oscar the Grouch, but I've met a lot of people that are worthy of the name Oscar the Grouch. And you know the type. They are grumpy, and they are just plain ornery and mean. These are the guys that continually complain and threaten and find fault and criticize, and nobody ever measures up and nobody ever gets it right. Nabal was a grouch. Actually, Nabal was kind of a grouch's grouch, the kind of person that a grouch could look up to learn how to be grouchier still. And his story is in 1 Samuel chapter 25. If you have your own Bible, I encourage you to follow along in it. If not, then why don't you pick up the blue Wooddale Bible in front of you and turn to page 459. Now Samuel died, and all Israel assembled and mourned for him, and they buried him at his home in Ramah. Then David moved down into the desert of Maon. A certain man in Maon who had property there at Carmel was very wealthy. He had 1,000 goats and 3,000 sheep, which he was shearing in Carmel. His name was Nabal, and his wife's name was Abigail. She was an intelligent and beautiful woman, but her husband, the Calebite, was surly and mean in his dealings. While David was in the desert, he heard that Nabal was shearing sheep. So he sent 10 young men and said to them, "Go up to Nabal at Carmel and greet him in my name. Say to him, 'Long life to you, good health to you and your household, and good health to all that is yours.' Now I hear that it is sheep shearing time. When your shepherds were with us, we did not mistreat them, and the whole time that they were at Carmel, nothing of theirs was missing. Ask your own servants, and they will tell you. Therefore, be favorable toward my young men, since we come at a festive time. Please give your servants and your son David whatever you can find for them." When David's men arrived, they gave Nabal this message in David's name, and then they waited. Nabal answered David's servants, "Who is this David? Who is this son of Jesse? Many servants are breaking away from their masters these days. Why should I take my bread and water and the meat I have slaughtered for my shearers and give it to men coming from who knows where?" David's men turned around and went back. When they arrived, they reported every word. David said to his men, "Put on your swords." So they put on their swords, and David put on his. About 400 men went up with David, while 200 stayed with the supplies. 1,000 years before Jesus, and it was troubled times in the nation of Israel. For a generation, they had looked to a prophet named Samuel as their spiritual leader. But he had just died, and there was great grief in the nation and a great deal of uncertainty about the future. King Saul was on the throne, but day by day he was destabilizing, so that they had a madman that was ruling the nation. David was God's choice to become the next king of Israel, but he had been anointed on orders from God in a private ceremony with him and Samuel. And Samuel was now dead, so David knew, but who else knew, and what could David do? He was a young man. He was in his 20s. For his age, he had had some shocking, wonderful, amazing experiences in life. He had killed a giant named Goliath. He had gone into battle against the enemy armies of Philistia. He had married the king's daughter, Princess Michal, and he had had the king turn against him and want to kill him. So for his age, he had experienced a lot and he had learned a lot, but he still had a lot of growing up to do before he would be mature enough to legitimately sit on the throne. A small army had gathered around him, not because he recruited them, but because they came to him. they were renegades. They were outlaws. They were people that were kind of the misfits of the day. And they came to David and they volunteered to align with him. So instead of being alone, now he had 600 mouths to feed. And that meant that although it was a small army, he had to do all the things that an army had to do, had to have an infrastructure and had to have money and had to clothe them and arm them and everything else. So one of his tactics was that David would organize bands of men and they would go out to provide security, uninvited security, for area farmers during sheep shearing season. And then after providing this security, he would ask them to generously give some kind of reward for the men's services. Now what this sounds like is the mafia. This is kind of a protection racket that David seems to be running. And he says, you know, I'll provide protection for you. And look, you know, when I'm around protecting you, nothing bad happens. So give us the money afterwards. And, you know, it seemed totally out of place. So Nabal, who was this wealthy guy with a beautiful and intelligent wife and a mean personality, he decided to stand up to David and his expectations. He considered David to be a nobody. Although David was a war hero in Israel, he was a famous man, and there were already rumors out there that he would become the next king of the nation. But he considered David to be a renegade and considered all of those who were with him to be alien lawbreakers and rebels. So Nabal responded with this surly personality and with a nasty tone to his voice, saying, "Who is this David? Who is this son of Jesse? You know what's happening these days? There are many servants who are breaking away from their masters. And why should I take my bread and my water and my meat that I've slaughtered for my shares? Why should I give what's legitimately mine to these men who are coming from who knows where?" So Nabal insisted, and I think you could argue that he had every right to insist this, that these were his resources and he had never asked them to provide the protection they provided. And so what if they were hungry? It didn't make any difference. As far as he was concerned, they were uninvited troublemakers. So there. Well, when David received the response that Nabal had given, he reacted by saying, "Fine, let's go kill him. Let's go kill him and every other male that works for him or in his family. And that'll teach him a lesson. If we kill him, he'll probably never want to do this again." So you read this story and it looks pretty obvious that Nabal was right and David was wrong. That David was there without permission, that he was unemployed, that he was hungry. All of that was David's problem. That certainly didn't obligate Nabal to help out these uninvited out-of-town intruders. Or did it? This was sort of a harvest time. It was that season of the year when they would shear their sheep. And it was a festive time, the time of year when people were especially gracious and loving and generous to one another. I suppose you could compare it to our Christmas season. And this took place in the Middle East, where in those times and today, hospitality is considered to be a top value. It's considered to be a moral obligation. That to not open your home and feed others who have a need, that's considered to be rude. It's actually considered to be morally wrong. And this was the land of the Bible. This was the land of the God of Israel, who had given laws and regulations for how the people were to faithfully live for him. So, for example, in Deuteronomy 10, God's word said, "God defends the cause of the fatherless and the widow and loves the alien, giving him food and clothing. And you are to love those who are aliens, for you yourselves were aliens in Egypt." Nabal, he was grouchy and he was grumpy and he was greedy and he was cruel. He was cruel to those who had been nice to him and he was rude to the person who was God's anointed choice to become the next king of Israel. So David decided to kill him. That's kind of an overreaction, you know? You want to go to somebody's house for lunch and they don't invite you in, so you murder them for not inviting you to lunch. I consider that to be an overreaction. And David if he's going to be the king of Israel, he needs to learn, you know, some niceties of the law. He needs to find out that being a grouch is a bad thing, but it's not a capital offense. You don't kill people for grouchiness. So Nabal, he was a jerk, just a jerk with a wonderful wife. A wonderful wife who was beautiful and who was smart. And she leads the list of beautiful, smart women married to jerks. She's not the only one in history that's been in this kind of a situation. And maybe you wonder yourself, as I sometimes do, how some couples ever get together. And you look at Abigail and say, what was she thinking? Why did she ever marry this guy in the first place? Because Nabal was a mess. And Abigail, she was marvelous. One of the servants told Nabal's wife, Abigail, David sent messengers from the desert to give our master his greetings, but he hurled insults at them. Yet these men were very good to us. They did not mistreat us, and the whole time we were out in the fields near them, nothing was missing. Night and day, they were a wall around us all the time that we were herding our sheep near them. Now think it over, Abigail, and see what you can do, because disaster is hanging over our master and his whole household. He's such a wicked man that no one can talk to him. Abigail lost no time. She took 200 loaves of bread, 2 skins of wine, 5 dressed sheep, 5 seahs, that would be like a bushel, 5 seahs of roasted grain, 100 cakes of raisins, and 200 cakes of pressed figs, and loaded them on donkeys. Then she told her servants, go on ahead, I'll follow you. But she did not tell her husband Nabal. As she came riding her donkey into a mountain ravine, there were David and his men descending toward her, and she met them. David had just said, it's been useless, all my watching over this fellow's property in the desert so that nothing of his was missing. He has paid me back evil for good. May God deal with David, be it ever so severely, if by morning I leave alive one male of all who belong to him. So as soon as she heard what had happened, she immediately took action to intervene and to de-escalate what was a rising conflict. She ordered food. She had it packed into a caravan. She personally went directly to David to try to intervene and stop David from killing her husband and the other male members of the household. And we're going to read what happened next in the story. But before we do that, let me just propose that she is a model for how to deal with conflict, not just 1,000 years before Jesus, but now at the beginning of the 21st century as well. There's a lot that we can learn for conflict situations from Abigail. For example, she was deferential and respectful toward David, even though he had threatened her husband. She accepted blame that really wasn't hers. She hadn't done anything wrong, but she was willing to take the blame on herself. She acknowledged that her husband was wicked. She says something that's, I find kind of funny. She said, you know, my husband really is a good name, because the Hebrew word Nabal in English is fool. So she said, of course, she's admitting she married a fool when she says that. But, you know, she's, what were his parents thinking when they married, when they named him Nabal? So probably it was a nickname. Probably a nickname that was given to people that kind of got to know him. And then she explained that she didn't actually know what was going on until after it happened. And then she blessed David, and she was generous to him. She didn't have to be any more than her husband had to be. And then she did something I find stunning. She gave David direct advice. But David could have killed her as much as he could have killed her husband. She looked him in the eye and she said, David, don't be so impulsive. Don't shed innocent blood. Because if you do, it will come back and haunt your conscience for the rest of your life. So David, just don't do it. Don't wreck your life by doing something inappropriate on an unthinking impulse. So it makes us wonder, you know, who we are in this story. Are you and I like Nabal, who overreacts, or like David, who overreacts, or like Abigail, who de-escalates the conflict to save a life? When Abigail saw David, she quickly got off her donkey and bowed down before David with her face to the ground. She fell at his feet and said, "My Lord, let the blame be on me alone. Please let your servant speak to you. Hear what your servant has to say. May my Lord pay no attention to that wicked man Nabal. He is just like his name. His name is Fool, and folly goes with him. But as for me, your servant, I did not see the men my master sent. Now, since the Lord has kept you, my master David, from bloodshed and from avenging yourself with your own hands, as surely as the Lord lives and as you live, may your enemies and all who intend to harm my master be like Nabal. And let this gift which your servant has brought to my master be given to the men who follow you. Please forgive your servant's offense, for the Lord will certainly make a lasting dynasty for my master because he fights the Lord's battles. Let no wrongdoing be found in you as long as you live. Even though someone is pursuing you to take your life, the life of my master will be bound securely in the bundle of the living by the Lord your God. But the lives of your enemies he will hurl away as from the pocket of a sling. When the Lord has done for my master every good thing he promised concerning him and has appointed him leader over Israel, my master will not have on his conscience the staggering burden of needless bloodshed or of having avenged himself. And when the Lord has brought my master success, remember me, Abigail, your servant." So Abigail was quick thinking. She had great strategies in terms of de-escalating a rising conflict. She ended up saving her husband's life and saving David from wrecking his own life. Because if he did what he was proposing to do, if he went in there and killed this man because of this insult, probably he would have lost all credibility in his home province of Judah. And if he lost credibility there, he would lose credibility in the nation, and that would be a major blockade, perhaps even a means to stopping him forever ascending the throne of Israel. David needed to grow up. He needed to mature, and Abigail was God's agent toward that maturity. David, he was impulsive, but he was also responsive. So that when he was confronted with reason and with grace, he was willing to change his mind. That is always a characteristic of maturity. That when we do something that is inappropriate, something we never should have said or done, and then someone confronts us graciously and thoughtfully, that we don't have to hold our ground, that we actually can be grown up enough to be able to change our minds. So David said to Abigail, "Praise be to the Lord, the God of Israel, who has sent you today to meet me. May you be blessed for your good judgment and for keeping me from bloodshed this day and from avenging myself with my own hands. Otherwise, as surely as the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, who has kept me from harming you, if you had not come quickly to meet me, not one male belonging to Nabal would have been left alive by daybreak." Then David accepted from her hand what she had brought to him and said, "Go home in peace. I have heard your words and granted your request." So how do you respond? How do you respond when you have initiated bad judgment and almost made a fool out of yourself, or made a fool out of yourself, and then you're confronted by God with grace and with reason? Don't be like Nabal. Don't be like David. Be like Abigail. All right, I got to tell you that what happened in the rest of this story is worthy of a surprise ending for a Hollywood movie. And when I read it, I know some of my reactions are, I don't know what they are. It's a sad story, but it's kind of funny. And I'm a little embarrassed that I find it funny and I laugh at it, but it's kind of delightful. But it's tragic, and I just want to go on record and say it's absolutely tragic. This is a bad thing. But okay, so after all this, Abigail goes home, and she knows sooner or later she's got to tell her husband because she's been away and she's given away all this stuff. But she knows that you got to get the right time with this guy, because if you do it at the wrong time, you're dealing with somebody who is really unpredictable, who is violent. So when Abigail went to Nabal, He was in the house holding a banquet like that of a king. He was in high spirits and very drunk. So she told him nothing until daybreak. Then in the morning, when Nabal was sober, his wife told him all these things, and his heart failed him, and he became like a stone. And about 10 days later, the Lord struck Nabal, and he died. A study was done by British researchers of civil servants in the United Kingdom, and there were a lot of conclusions. But one of the conclusions was that those who have hostile personal relationships, 34% were likely to experience chest pains, heart attacks, and other coronary troubles. So I think there's a couple of overlapping explanations why Nabal had a heart attack and died. One was that he was a grouch, and grouchiness caused a heart attack. And the other was that he was a grouch, and God got fed up with him being so grouchy, and so God struck him dead. But there's more. When David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, "Praise be to the Lord." You're not really supposed to say that when people die. I mean, that's kind of insensitive. And you try to imagine what it was like at Nabal's funeral when everybody was laughing and clapping and praising the Lord. But he was dead. And when David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, "Praise be to the Lord who has upheld my cause against Nabal for treating me with contempt. He has kept his servant from doing wrong and has brought Nabal's wrongdoing down on his own head." The story gets really strange. Then David sent word to Abigail, asking her to become his wife. His servants went to Carmel and said to Abigail, "David has sent us to take you to become his wife." And she said, "Sure." She bowed down with her face to the ground and said, "Here is your maidservant ready to serve you and wash the feet of my master's servants." And it gets stranger. Abigail quickly got on a donkey and, attended by her five maids, went with David's messengers and became his wife. David also married Ahinoam of Jezreel, and they both were his wives. But Saul had given his daughter, Michal, David's wife, to Paltiel, son of Laish, who was from Galim. I hardly know what to think here. So David, okay, he's so impressed with Abigail in this short conversation they have at a ravine in the mountains that as soon as she finds out that Nabal is dead, he sends a proposal. He doesn't go himself. He sends a messenger to propose to her. And I don't know the exact timeline. It kind of gives the impression he isn't even buried yet. And here's a proposal. "Will you marry me?" And she says, "Sure." You know, she gets on her donkey and leaves and then goes and marries David. But David's already married. And the backstory here is that he was married to the princess of the country, Princess Michal, and that she passionately loved David. It was this marvelous romance. In fact, in an earlier part of the biography of David, Michal had actually risked her own life in order to save David. David wouldn't even be alive if it weren't for what his wife had done. The trouble was that his father-in-law, Saul, was so angry with David that he took his daughter back and forced her to marry somebody else. So she's passionately in love with David and married to him and forced to marry some other guy that apparently she doesn't even know up until this point. I mean, I can hardly imagine all this. And David, who is married to Michal, then he marries Abigail, and then he takes another wife. So it was a long time ago, and I'm mad at him for what he did. And I'm just unhappy that David would behave in such an unbiblical way. Because the Bible is clear that God's ideal is one man married to one woman, and this is a lifetime commitment and relationship. But what David did was behave just like all the pagan kings around him. By the way, the average person in those days wasn't polygamous. It was only for the rich and the powerful. And David was acting like he was a rich and powerful king. He wasn't even the king yet. His behavior was just totally unacceptable and inappropriate. And then, I guess, the one good side of all this is that he then sort of inherits all of Nabal's livestock and land and the land of this other woman that he marries as well. So now he has the means to support his army and to move on and advance toward the throne. So what we've got here is a biblical story with a lot of bad judgment. And it's a lesson. It's a lesson for us. It's a lesson for us to cool off when other people cross us. And it's a call to trust God, not be so hasty, that we trust God for the long term and not allow our impulsiveness to destroy us in the midst of questionable judgment. It's a lesson. Don't be an impulsive fool like Nabal. And when we react badly like David, we need to listen to and heed the Abigails that God sends into our lives. In February of this year, a 27-year-old woman from Fort Pierce, Florida, went into a McDonald's and ordered McNuggets. And she paid for them. And then the server at the counter came and said, "Sorry, we're out of McNuggets, but you can have anything else that's on the menu." But her mouth was already set for McNuggets, so she demanded that she get the McNuggets. And the manager came and said, "Sorry, we don't have any more McNuggets." And she said, "I've paid for them, and I demand my McNuggets." And then she called 911 and declared it an emergency and insisted to the 911 dispatcher that she get her McNuggets. The 911 dispatcher thought it was a joke and hung up on her. So she called 911 again and said, "This is a real emergency. I need my McNuggets and you need to do something about this." The dispatcher hung up on her again. So she called 911 a third time. And with the third call, they sent out the police and ticketed her for misusing 911. And it sort of sounds like this biblical story. It's kind of like Nabal went into McDonald's, and unfortunately, he left Abigail out in the minivan. And the moral of the story is be like Abigail, not like Nabal. Our God, we're going to face conflicts. We do. Everywhere we go, everywhere there's people, there's differences of opinion, there are insults, there are offenses or the perceptions of them. And we've got to choose whether or not we are going to be those who escalate the conflict or de-escalate it. May we follow the words of Jesus, who told us that we are to love others, including that we are to love our enemies, that we're to turn the other cheek, that we are to be gracious and kind, even in the midst of the hostility that others may hurl our way. So God, help us to remember this biblical story, but more than that, by your Spirit, help us to respond like Abigail. Better yet, help us to respond like Jesus. In whose name we pray. Amen.